As a child, I would dream of the bottom of the sea. If I swam deep enough, there was air to breathe. A world between worlds where anything could be. They were hanging out, partying, fancy free. All sorts of souls in all the colors you could dream. And no one ever spoke except to say to me, are you listening? Are you listening?
That's Are You Listening? The opening track on the new album by Lyra Lynn called On My Own. That title explains the vision, a full record written, played, recorded, and mixed by the artist herself, a first for her. In the conversation ahead, we talk about what made that opening shaker sound, how she got herself up the learning curve of recording, and the freedom that came from writing songs without a guitar in her hand. I reached Lyra at her home, where she made the album, on November 4th. Last time we talked about 2 years ago, one of the things that I noted down and that you expressed was that you're somebody that always looking for a new challenge, something novelty, something to sort of scramble the deck a bit. And clearly this is that. When did this idea occur to you? Did you sneak into it, or did you have a revelation that this was something you needed to do?
I think it was a little bit of both, actually. I had a limited amount of recording gear and started working just purely off of inspiration, and wanted to experiment with recording some sounds and mostly stacking vocals. And I had some ideas there, and it went well. And then I did another one, and that went well. And then I did another one, and I thought, maybe I can do an entire record this way. And I spoke to a couple of people about it, including one producer that I had been working with, that I was sort of interviewing, and he cautioned me against doing it. He thought it was a really bad idea. And I said, great. I know exactly what I'll do now. I thought, you know, as I progressed through the process, it became more and more clear to me that it was really important for me to do as much of it as I possibly could to try and do it all on my own as a statement, not only to that one person who said, I don't think you can do this, but mostly for women who get told that all the time in the music industry. And I know that that's changing rapidly, and I know that plenty of women have made records and are making records on their own. I just wanted to be one more voice in that choir saying, yeah, you can do this. No problem.
Were you writing songs along with the production process, or were you figuring out how to produce songs that you had built into a little basket?
Both, but mostly writing as I was recording. Mm-hmm. And that was really the most liberating aspect of this record for me, was having the time and creative freedom to be able to use a drum loop as inspiration for songwriting and not have a plan and really just follow the muse, and mostly not have someone around saying, no, that's not a good idea, I don't want to try that, etc.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a first song going well. What was that first song?
It doesn't matter.
Don't waste your time. Trying to ride the line. You're not so different from everyone else. We're all sailing in a fog on a sea of rat race hell.
And that's a song that I actually I mean, you know, sat down with an acoustic guitar on the back porch sort of and stumbled upon and thought, oh, this could be interesting. Maybe I'll try recording it. But for the most part, I did want to get away from the acoustic guitar because it kind of locks me down harmonically. And, you know, I have certain propensities with the acoustic guitar in my hand that I wanted to try and avoid. So obviously just not holding that helped free my mind and give me a new route that I couldn't have planned for.
What struck me is that you are able to carry on and build on an aesthetic that you've established in prior records. You've used some of those synth percussion Casio sounds before. You've used washes of sound. You've used highly reverberated guitar. But in the prior cases, you were working in a team and there was a producer and somebody else playing the guitar or an electric guitar, and you would be in juxtaposition with that. Were you thinking, I mean, I suppose it's just, you know, we all have this sound inside us, but talk about that, about, you know, the there's a through line. Are you surprised that I'm saying that? Or do you think that you looked at, listened back and went, yeah, I see how this is, or you maybe even taken some cues from things that have worked for you that you just enjoy?
Yes, that's part of it for sure. There are my go-to sounds, you know, like the Ace Tone rhythm machine, the drum looping machine. But also a lot of it was just due to the fact that I had very limited resources. I didn't have a bunch of keyboards or organs or, I didn't even have drums when I started making the record. I used a paint canvas to do the kick drum on It Doesn't Matter.
Really? Cool.
And the,
nice.
And the sort of brushes on the snare sound. Those are both on a paint canvas, you know, and then I like slowly started collecting more instruments that I bought off Craigslist, and I borrowed some things here and there, some preamps and compressors and keyboards and, you know, things to sort of widen the spectrum. But, you know, what I actually own are guitars, amps, and some effects pedals and some crappy drums. So that's a big part of why those tones are still present. But I think it is, you know, helpful to have some through line, as you suggest, from record to record. I always want to keep the conversation changing with the listener and challenge them in a way. But I do think it is important to have some similar tones and colors.
Mm-hmm. And to talk me through the trial and error versus going and seeking out some training and how to make sure that mic on the amp is giving you the best possible spread and the vocals are clean without having any things that build up when you build up the tracks. And there's technical sides of this that are not intuitive in many cases. And the little fooling around I do in GarageBand, I run into stuff all the time. They just sort of like, it feels sort of soul sucking. You're like, well, I know what I want to do, but you know, how is your learning curve?
Sharp. Mm-hmm. But you know, that said, it's a mess. I mean, the tracks really, like, from an actual engineering standpoint, if someone who knows what they're doing looks at it, they're going to go, this is a fucking nightmare.
That's funny you say that, really.
But I'll say also that while I have massive respect for audio engineers, it's a whole lifetime of work can go into perfecting that snare sound and all of those things. I often am frustrated by the effect that approach has on the momentum of recording. You know, to me, it drives me nuts when you go in for a session and you spend the whole first 12 hours getting drum sounds. I mean, look, there are some amazing drum sounds out there, and I love listening to those. You know, I'm really glad that somebody else spent that time on it. I just don't know that I have the patience to do it myself. I mean, I spent more time on certain aspects, like recording the drums, but otherwise I literally would use the mic wherever it was in the room. I wouldn't overthink it at all. Is it working? Is it on? Does the level work okay? Am I clipping? No. Great. Let's roll. You know, it was important for me to really keep the momentum going so that I could follow the muse. I mean, again, having no plan, going into a lot of these songs really mandated that I be able to do that and not get too bogged down with technical stuff.
That's great. I think Belmont and MTSU's recording program are going to like suppress your interviews because the secret's going to get out that like all you need is a little bit of intuition and good ears and a roll.
You know, the other challenge I faced though, given that is the room that I was working in was completely untreated. The ceilings were like 25 feet tall. It's like one of these old Victorian houses where they had removed the old ceiling and opened it all the way up to the attic. So, I mean, the room was really unworkable from an audio standpoint too.
Funny.
So yeah. I really had to just embrace the scenario and go with it. I had very little control over the acoustics.
Was it at your own place?
Yeah.
Or, yeah, okay. And now you live with Todd Lombardo, who's a sonic wizard, I think, one of my favorite guitar tone men in town. Did you have to consciously, how much did you sort of say, don't even ask until I'm done? Or were you tempted to go, hey, what would you do here? I mean, how did you consult with somebody who's obviously very close to you?
Well, I wanted to impress him. You know, in the beginning of this project, I was like, well, maybe, you know, I'll have you come in and replace all these guitars and then I'll do drums here and there and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, no, I think you got it. Just man up and do it. Woman up and do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I really appreciated that he supported and pushed me in that way. And I also would play the tracks for him once I got them to a mostly done spot. He's a really reactive sort of listener, physically reactive listener. So I could just watch him listen to the tracks that I'd built, and I would know. I mean, you always know intuitively if it's weak or not, or where the weaknesses lie. But I could watch him listen and get some affirmation with my own instincts. And he you know, there was one song that he was like, "This is not good."
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
I was like, I know, damn it. I really want it to work. But but you know, mostly I worked on everything in complete isolation. I mean that by not sharing the process with anyone else until it was to a mostly finished point.
Yeah. 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 I love the allusion you made to using the paint canvas and the brush, because that is something you've been doing as a another medium, another way to spend time, another creative outlet. And was that a fairly recent addition to your life, or something you've taken more seriously in recent years? Or and is there any other way that the two things played off each other and helped each other?
They absolutely played off and helped each other. I had my easel and supplies set up in the same room where I was recording, and so in a way, that's how I could shift my brain into producer brain and or listener brain and creator brain, and go back and forth between the two when I would get stuck with a track or uncertain about a decision that I had made or direction I was going. I would stop recording and paint for a little while and clear my mind. And then I'd go back and listen, and the answer would be pretty clear to me how to move forward. And then obviously the paint supplies made their way and onto the record too.
The first sound we hear on the record, the opening of Are You Listening, it sounds to me like a shaker gourd, but it could be any number of things. But I imagine you gave a lot of thought to the very first sonic impression that the listener would hear. Tell me about that.
Gosh. I wish I'd given a lot of thought to the very first impression that the listener would hear. I actually thought that song would not make the cut for the record.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Got it so grand.
I didn't like it. It was really one of my first attempts at doing a hopeful number, which I'm terrified of still. That's a track that I finished and played for Todd, and he was like, this is great. And I sent it to a couple other friends, and they're like, yeah, I get why you're feeling a little insecure about it, because it's not a muscle you flex very often, but it's great. It's nice to hear something hopeful from you. And so I thought, I'll put it on the record maybe at the end. management and other people that are involved in the process of releasing all thought, this should be number one. So that's the only instinct I went against with this record.
Okay.
But to answer your other question, it's a box of Runtz candy.
Get out. Really? Cool. Yeah. Well, those are apparently a lot better than like Mike and Ike's or M&M's, I'm told. So
you mean in the audio world or the flavor world?
The audio world. Oh yeah. They talk about this all the time. My favorite track is Dark Horse. Does anybody else say that? It's just got it, you know, the way it sort of explodes halfway in with the groove and it builds on itself. Love it. Just what would you say about
Thanks.
That song and about the treatment?
Nobody else says that, but it's my favorite song on the record too.
Right.
I released it late in 2019 before the record was done and before I really had any kind of plan together for it. But I love that track and I hope that it will get the attention that I believe it deserves.
Come alive, call to say you're on the way over. See me try to turn my gaze any other way. All this time I dance, I feel a mystery.
That was another one that I totally followed the muse on. I mm-hmm. started playing the Wurlitzer piano and had the drum loop going, and it ended up being really weird kind of major over minor harmonic thing that I would never have done with just the guitar in my hand. So, and that's a door that opened for me just focusing on drums and bass and writing the melody and then playing the chords later on.
Yeah.
It was an important part of that process for me.
That's great. I was going to ask you about those very kinds of insights or those little revelations that happen because of trying something new. What was the most far out instrumental thing you had to grapple with where you had something up here and then was there any one that stands out as particularly stretchy or weird for you?
I mean, the whole record was stretchy for me because I'm not a drummer. I'm not a bassist. I'm not a keyboard player. I'm hardly a guitarist, you know.
Oh, come on.
I mean, I live in Nashville surrounded by people who are professional instrumentalists, and I would never put myself in that category. So, you know, often I would hear things that I couldn't necessarily play, and I would have to practice several times before I hit record, you know.
Yeah.
That was fun, though. Yeah, I think the whole record had me stretching for sure.
Great. Well, we feel it, but it doesn't feel like it doesn't sound hard. You know, I mean, it's
still very simple.
You know, what was the easiest track? Was there one that stood out as like?
I think Make You Okay. That song, that's one that just sort of fell into my lap one morning sitting at in the kitchen eating breakfast with acoustic guitar in my hand, just boom, the whole song appeared and I went in and recorded it. And I think it was all done in a couple of days time.
Great. Well, congrats on a lovely project. It is, been a joy so far and I will enjoy it the rest of the year and beyond. Just to sign off, your life has changed. You're a mom. You've got, even if you could tour hard, you wouldn't be touring hard probably right now. Any feelings about looking over the horizon of the winter and next year and carrying these songs and just, you know, your outlook right now?
Trying to stay positive.
Yeah,
we did have plans to tour, even though I have an infant. Because, you know, baby's got to eat. Mama's got to eat so she can breastfeed. I really don't know what to expect. We have plans to tour in the spring, everything just keeps getting pushed and pushed and pushed. So there's a part of me that fears that we might release another record before we tour again.
Right. As dreadful as that could be.
Yeah.
Wow. Lyra, I wish you all the best. It is a trying time, and may you get more sleep, and may you, enjoy your family, enjoy the love of this time, and thanks for the music.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks for taking the time.
I know you know there's a price for all this burn. We got to give this some relief.